Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to the CollectingCast.com podcast with Chris Harris and Edward Lovett.
Hello and welcome to another Collecting Cars podcast. And I'm sorry if there's any residual noise in the background, but today I'm at Silverstone with someone called Jensen Button. You might be familiar with him. And he is, this weekend, doing his first ever British GT race. And he's just done a little press event, a bit lower key than what you're used to in your F1 heyday, isn't it, Jensen? So tell us why you're back, first of all, racing in British GT.
First of all, hello. How are you doing?
I'm very good, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good. Well, I am doing the last round of the British GT Championship in the UK, obviously, as it's the British GT Championship. But I'm racing for my team, Jensen Team Rocket RJN. We've had a car in the championship all year.
Yeah.
We're two young guns. One's a gamer. It's his first year actually driving in reality, and he's really, really quick.
They're having a cracking season, aren't they?
They are. I mean, they've been a little bit unlucky with the weather because, first of all, they won the first race.
Yeah.
They tested the car for one day. That was it. And they won the first race. But then it rained, as it does in the UK.
Yeah.
They'd never driven the car in the wet. So they struggled to get the balance right, and it took a little while, and they've lost a lot of points because of those wet races. So they're currently fourth in the championship. They can still win it, but it's going to be a tall order. They need a bit of help from another team, maybe their sister car, which is myself.
Oh, so it's like the old Formula 4 festival where you'd get a rogue in to be a rear gunner.
Oh, totally.
Are you rear gunner?
I like to think of ourselves as the Steve Soper of BTCC.
Ooh.
So I'm coming in, you know, remember the Texaco Sierra Cozzi?
Yeah.
And I used to love it when he'd come and race Rouse in the Caliber Cozzi. And he used to come in and fight for the win with him and push him a little bit harder. And that's hopefully what we're going to do this weekend.
I think it's really interesting that you've done this and that you've done lots of racing. You did Japanese GT, you've done lots of other stuff as well. And also your Baja stuff, which we'll talk about. A lot of people, when they retire in your position, just disappear from the sport. And I think that exposes them as maybe being career racing drivers and not real racing enthusiasts. But you clearly can't kick the bug.
There's two things. I think one, they've done it as a job. But for me, this is the dream. It's a job. It's a hobby. And I don't mind putting myself out there as well. I think that's the issue for a lot of F1 drivers. You know, they've been at the pinnacle. They don't want to go and race with amateurs. For me, it's all a bit of fun. It's like going indoor karting in a way. You know, I actually love it. It doesn't matter what I drive. I want to go out there and have fun. And I want to be competitive.
Could you say that if you hadn't won the Formula One World Championship? Because once you've done that, you have nothing left to prove.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, people are going to expect me to win next weekend that don't know GT racing. But I can tell you this. These things, from what I've heard, are not easy to drive. I've never driven with ABS, and I've never driven with a car this heavy. So weight transfer and everything, it's going to take a bit of time to get used to. But I'm really looking forward to it. I love Silverstone. the field's pretty competitive. There's a couple of guys in there that are top notch.
Yeah.
Berman, I mean, he's one of the best GT racers ever. You got Phil Keane racing. I mean, I remember these guys when I was growing up watching them race. Rob Collard.
Yeah.
I mean, he's like 50. And
just
he's
back
racing.
From a very good race at Spa, I think.
Yeah,
they
just won their class at Spa, the 24 hours. So it's a competitive field, and we're also going up against our sister car, as I said, both young guns, doing a great job. And I'm more importantly, I'm alongside my best buddy, you know, Chris Buncombe, Christopher Buncombe, Chrissy as I know him. We've never raced together on the same circuit, on the same weekend, let alone in the same car. Chrissy won Le Mans back in 2007 at LMP2. I've obviously won the F1 World Championships, which is pretty cool. So we're coming together, a lot of experience. He's a bronze.
Yeah, that irritated me in the years I raced against him. The fact he was a bronze,
yeah, so
would irritate me.
Yeah, in GT racing, for people that don't know, you get it's graded as drivers, and I'm a platinum because I've raced in F1, and I don't think it changes. Well, I might do actually when I get.
When you're 50, you go down. You'll go down to gold.
Oh, that's useful.
Yeah.
So it changes nothing. but Chrissy was out of racing for 7 years. So he lost the grade. So he went down to silver. And then he turned 40. He's now 42. And he went down another grade. So he's a bronze. So we're a pro-am lineup, which is very exciting.
It's caused a little bit of consternation amongst the British GT regulars, hasn't it?
Yes, it has, which is fantastic. But that's what the grading system is all about. It's about grading drivers on their experience and their age. And I'm 40 now, so we're almost the oldest driver pairing. You know, we're 82 years between us. Our teammates, they're 42 years between them.
So pretty much your age.
Yeah,
wow.
Exactly. So, but no, it's cool. There's the silver championship in British GT, and then there's the pro-am. But basically, you're all racing to win.
Look, SRO do a great job. I've been amongst their stuff for a while. People whinge about the balanced performance and stuff, but you know what? There is no better racing on the planet.
Yeah.
Stefan puts on a great championship. The variety of shapes of cars, the brands that are represented, frankly, for me, I just love the fact they look like real cars. They look like something that's tangible, not like a racing slipper.
Totally, and a Bentley is never going to beat a McLaren 720 if you just took the road cars and put them on the track. So they need to do balance of performance. But it doesn't take away from the fact that you can still do a great job that weekend on developing your car and putting it in the right window. So that's why it's such a special championship. And as you said, they look kind of like road cars. I mean, not many people can go and buy this on the road.
No.
But a few of the cars you could. You know, the Merc, there's a Merc racing.
Yeah. They're tangible. They look like race on a Sunday, flog on a Monday. This vaguely fits with that strategy. Right, let's get away from GT racing. I want to ask you something I've always wanted to ask you as a fellow Somerset boy. What's it like when you drive over the line at Interlagos, someone comes on the radio and says, you, Jensen, are the Formula 1 World Champion. And I suspect many, many years of your life coalesce into one moment. And I've always wanted to ask you what that feels like.
Well, I kind of knew that I was there before anyone said anything on the radio. First of all, that last lap, you know, people say they just want to get it done when they win a world championship. For me, I wanted that last lap to last forever because you never know if it's going to happen again, and it never happened again. So I really enjoyed that last lap when I crossed the finish line, and Shovers, as I called him, Andrew Shovlin, was my engineer at the time. He's now the chief engineer at Mercedes and has been ever since Mercedes started. So he's won multiple world championships since. But when his soft voice came on the radio, Jensen, you are the world champion. Very emotional and tears in my eyes. And then I went on to sing, you know, We Are the Champions, beautifully. Sorry, Freddie. up until that moment, I had to wait 20, 30 seconds before I started singing because it was just so much emotion because I went through so much through my career of thinking it was over after 1 year in F1 to 2008 when Honda pulled out thinking it was over again. And even that 1 year with Braun, there were so many highs and lows. You know, I won 6 of the first 7 races and then it sort of went pretty bad from there.
Then they caught up.
And then I felt the pressure. I don't mind saying it. I felt the pressure. And then that came to Brazil. I qualified 14th on the grid. My two competitors, one was Rubens, qualified on pole, and my other competitor qualified 18th, Sebastian Vettel. So it was mixed feelings. But I remember getting out of the car and I was so angry with myself and angry with the team, to be fair, because we went out on the wrong tyres and made a mistake there. Travelled back to the hotel, sat at the bar with my dad, which is normally where you would have found him, and over a beer, I said to him, I said, this isn't going to go on any longer. I'm going to win the championship tomorrow. I have to win the championship tomorrow. He just looked at me and said, go on, son. I actually feel a bit emotional saying that. But then the next day I woke up just so determined. And I walked into the engineer's office and I remember Ross Brawn looking at me and giving me a little wink because he knew what I was going to do. I was so focused and the rest is history.
It's an amazing story, the Brawn story. And those that are new to F1 will not understand how spectacular it was, this idea that Honda left the sport, Ross Brawn and some others get together. Was it Nick Fry, was it? And they effectively buy it, in inverted commas, however it works. And you're driving this car. Now, I imagine in my mind that you got in this car the first day you test it, and someone like you, a bit like when Mario Andretti first drove a Lotus 79, I'm sure he went, oh, we're in here. Did you know?
The first day we drove the car was actually 200 metres from where we're sat right now.
Was it?
Yeah, because we drove it around the Stowe circuit.
The lovely Stowe circuit.
Yeah, exactly. The tiny little, it's basically the school track. And as you know, we've just been doing a photo shoot with the cars, with the GT cars, but also the Brawn is here.
The Brawn is here. We're actually looking at it now.
It's being loaded onto the
trailer. Tell you what, and it's a pretty thing. A pretty lovely small racing car.
We'll come on to that in a bit. Anyway, that's the actual car that we were testing 200 metres from here when we first launched the car and first drove the car and shook it down. Someone just showed me a video of it actually running over there, which is quite cool. And I first drove it, and the main thing then was not, oh, this is going to be a race win. It was, nothing's gone wrong. You know, we drove it out of the tent.
Yeah.
Drove it around for a few laps, installed it, and then pushed it for a few laps. And I was like, yeah, nothing feels wrong with it. And that was the thing. It was so cold. You're never going to feel how a car works. But normally when you pull out a car, all the electronics on it, something goes wrong. Yeah. Nothing went wrong. Smoothly, no issues whatsoever. Put it in the truck, and that's when we headed down to Barcelona for the first test. Pulled it out, did the first run, and immediately I knew the car felt good. But I came in and my engineer looked at me and smiled. I'm like, what's he smiling at? I said, like, how was it? I went, it's all right. You know, I think we can improve the car a lot. And he started giggling. I was like, what are you laughing at? He said, well, you're like 0.4 quicker than anyone. They've been testing all winter. It's the first 4 laps of the car. I was like, okay, right. Okay, let's add a couple more turns of front wing. And setup changes. We lowered the ride height to get it working. And it came alive. And we ended up 7 tenths quicker than that.
I love it. This idea, of course, it was painted as an underdog story, but of course, really, it was a car that had been developed already, that had been bought on spec, wasn't it?
Oh yeah, really? I mean, it probably spent more than any other team to get that car on the grid. You know, the aerodynamic package and the work that went into not just the rear diffuser, but the whole car itself. A lot of the work came from Japan. It was actually Honda Japan. Yeah. I actually remember that test. Lewis was driving, and he just won the world championship. And I remember driving around the outside of him at turn 3. I was just past the ex-world champion waving at him. Bye.
It changes very quickly sometimes in sport, doesn't it? One minute you are. So you're there.
Yeah.
So the highs of that. And let's face it, as a cub journalist back then, when you started your racing career, you were viewed in my world as being wonderfully ebullient, fun, a little bit out of control, not always perhaps as well managed as you might have been, but it all looked like great fun. You had a lot of fun racing, didn't you?
That's exactly as it was.
It looked great. I wanted to be you. I didn't want to be one of the others. It was like, Jensen's doing it right. The more they're whinging about him, the more he's doing it right.
Well, I was, but then there were times where I wasn't. And, you know, I was having so much fun. And my first year in F1 was so straightforward. You know, the car felt great. Frank and Patrick were very forgiving. I didn't really crash, to be fair, in a race. I don't think I ever crashed in a race. But very forgiving. I remember one time in Hockenheim, Frank said, you're a second slower than Ralph, your teammate, on the pit entry. He said, I want you to push harder next time. So I came in, lost it, put it in the wall in the pit lane. And I trundled back to the pits. And Patrick came and said, Jensen, what the effing hell were you doing there? And Frank shouted over. He said, Patrick, be quiet. Jensen, I'm proud of you. Thank you so much for pushing. I'm very proud of you. Just next time, take it a little easier. So, I mean, I could get away with anything with Frank.
Do you think that was with Frank because you were English and not German?
Possibly. But he was great. And then the second year, got signed up with Benetton, really excited. And, yeah, my talent was not enough. You know, I was terrible at engineering a car. I had no idea what to do. I had no understanding of a racing car. At all.
What, even through F3?
No. And I remember actually when I got my drive with Williams, I drove the car and I was 2.5 tenths quicker than their test driver. And then they made me do an exam. They said, right, here's the questions, fill out the answers. I had no idea. I got probably 3 right in 20 questions.
So to rewind a bit from there, karting, you made your name in karting, your father obviously legendary kart man, engine builder, you needed the John Button engine, of course you had to have it. So where did you progress straight from karting straight into F3?
I did Formula Ford.
Formula Ford. So you had to do that, yeah, okay.
Yeah, I did.
But you didn't learn anything in Formula Ford about setup.
But it's completely different in F1. I mean, a go-kart is the opposite of a racing car, yeah. Which now I go back to karting, I'm so confused. I want to change that because it should do this. And they're like, no, it does the opposite in a car. It's like, how can it do the opposite? It's got 4 wheels and it's made of metal. Yeah, so then I did Formula Ford. No, I didn't really. It was the Migao. You just slid it everywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
So different. An F3 car just worked.
It just worked.
And the Williams just worked as well. And then I got in the Benetton and it was upside down. Nothing worked. And my teammate was Giancarlo Fisichella, who's notoriously good at driving really bad cars.
Yeah.
So he blew me away a lot of the time. And mentally, really hurt. I didn't get it. I thought.
Also, you're quite an affable young bloke at that point. I presume your default position is everyone's my friend unless they present themselves otherwise.
No, totally.
So how did you deal with that sharky world of F1?
Well, I really struggled because I just didn't think I was good enough. I thought I'm not driving quick enough. I just don't have any skill. And to be fair, Flavio was really tough on me.
Yeah.
I remember I finished 7th in Monaco, which these days wouldn't be too bad, but I was just off the points, which were top 6. And he said, what were you doing? Were you driving around looking for an apartment or a boat to buy? And it's like, wow. And I got out of the car, my power steering had failed as well in the race, so I had my hands were blisters, not like these days where it's just easy power steering. And so it was really tough, but I needed that, you know, otherwise I wouldn't be racing in F1 past 2002. You know, they really pushed me hard, and he said, you need to knuckle down, you need to do the engineering work. My engineers were softies, get away with murder with them. So I'd turn up late, wouldn't really understand what was going on, just go, yeah, do that.
So how would the young Jensen Button have figured in the Red Bull drivers, young drivers
program? I would be Albon.
Would you?
Seriously, would be Albon.
So how do you view his treatment at the moment?
The thing is, I actually think that they've turned a corner with treating their young drivers. I think over the years they've been tough, especially with Gasly.
Yeah.
I think with Albon they've realised they need to take it a bit easier.
Yeah.
And maybe work with him with engineering and try and get him up to speed. I think the biggest issue is he's got the quickest driver in the world for outright speed as a teammate, who's also set the car up like he wants it, which is on the nose, very oversteery, and no one else can drive it.
Interesting you say he's the quickest driver in the world. Do you believe that?
Over one lap, I think he probably is. In a race, who knows? I think him and Lewis are up there. I also think Charles is with them. At the moment, I think Danny Rick's with them.
Yeah.
I think those 4 stand alone at the moment.
Yeah. And then I suppose it is who makes the fewest mistakes, and that's where Lewis is just a freak show, isn't he?
He is at the moment. And you look at his race pace compared to Valtteri. I mean, it's funny. Lewis is a different Lewis to what I knew. Lewis, when I knew him, was lightningly quick in qualifying. You know, like Valtteri can do. But in the race, he was quick, and then sometimes he could get one over on you, but a lot of the time he'd make mistakes or he would not understand how to get from A to B as quick as possible. He'd try and do every lap as fast as he could.
Yeah.
And he would destroy tyres, he would overuse fuel, choose the wrong strategy. But now it's a completely different Lewis.
Yeah, he doesn't
do that. Well, also because he doesn't have a Max Verstappen pushing him.
Yeah.
He doesn't have a Nico Rosberg pushing him either.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say my name in that because that would be weird.
Well, hold on. I do like the fact that you have to beat your teammate. Now, how did you stack up against Lewis, the EU race with him? It was pretty good, wasn't it?
It was good, and yeah, he beat me in qualifying. He won more races than me, but I think I won 8 races, he won 10 races. So it was pretty close. We had a lot of great races in our time together. For me, he was quicker than me in qualifying. You know, I out-qualified him a few times, but nothing like he did with me. But in the race, that's when it would come into my own, and I knew how to work the car, work the tyres, work the strategy, in mixed conditions especially. So I loved our fights, and it was sad when he left the team, really was. And I wish that I had the opportunity to race against him in a winning car, in a championship winning car. We weren't good enough to win the championship.
No, Red Bull were dominating them, weren't they?
That yeah, and to that. Be fair though, if one of us wasn't in the other car, we might have won the championship.
Yeah, good point.
We took so many wins off of each other. So, you know, one year we won 6 races, 3 each. Imagine the other guy wasn't there.
Yeah.
Would have won 6.
Never thought of it that way.
Yeah,
so. So maybe it is right that you won an absolute duffer in one seat.
Exactly.
Makes sense, doesn't it?
But I think Mercedes, no one's going to beat them for many years to come.
No.
What a team. I mean, what a team. I mean, Lewis, phenomenal what he's achieved. But what a team.
Yeah.
They've won every year since 2014.
It's outrageous.
Every year of hybrid.
Do you view that team as being the logical progression from that car we're looking at now? Do you still... Because I don't make the connection. It's a Braun and a Mercedes. But actually, that is the first Mercedes, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, it had a Mercedes engine in it as well. But it was designed by very different people. You know, when you look at how Mercedes was post-Braun, the first couple of years, they were okay. They were okay, but middle of the field. At that point, Mercedes turned around, I'm guessing, and said, this isn't good enough.
Yeah.
Let's pump loads of cash into this. Because the idea, Ross might not be saying this, not like me saying this, but I remember sat in a hotel room after we won the championship. We were in Abu Dhabi. No, we weren't. We were in Dubai, actually, in a hotel room.
That's nefarious. You shouldn't be there at all. Oh, you only go to Dubai to do bad things.
Exactly. Well, we just come back from the
race.
Who
went there to do good things, ever?
And we sat there, and we're discussing 2010. He's like, Nico Rosberg's going to be a teammate, and Mercedes is going to buy the team, but they're not going to fund the team. So they're going to buy the team, be funded by sponsorship money.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, okay, that's kind of interesting. But for me, I felt that it wasn't the right place to be because McLaren had come strong at the end of the season. They had the budget. You know, you look at their history as well of winning over the years.
Also, you must have, as a British racing driver, thought, I want to race at McLaren at some point.
I want a new challenge. I want to race against Lewis Hamilton.
Yeah.
And that was really exciting for me. Anyway, so the first couple of years of Mercedes, I don't think they were throwing money at it. And then suddenly they were. And they basically hired everyone from the pit lane. All the best aerodynamicists. They had like 5 chefs running the team. Proper chiefs. Which I thought, that's not going to work. There's too many chiefs. But it worked. And here they are. 6-7 years on the trot.
I remember being in a hotel room. I've never said this in public. No, sorry, in a hotel bar at the Mövenpick in Stuttgart Airport, 2013. There's a guy from Mercedes, Brixworth, hammered at the bar, and he carries on drinking with us. 2 in the morning, he goes, this was May, April, May time, because we've got Lewis next year. And I went, no, you haven't. And he went, I have. And I said, that's a lie. And he said, when you see our hybrid engine and how far ahead of anyone else we are, he's going to win it 3 or 4 times on the trot. And I laughed and went, you're just drunk, piss off.
Yeah.
And I didn't put a bet on.
And he was drunk, but...
but, yeah.
I knew what he was talking about.
It was also, until classic EJ, Eddie Jordan, sort of poked it out that this might happen, we all thought it was fanciful that it would ever happen that he'd go to Mercedes, didn't we?
Yeah.
But, yeah, they have just... They've just rewritten the way that you go about competing in Formula 1, haven't they?
Yeah, they're totally. I mean...
But for the good of the sport or the bad of the sport? I mean,
It's not for the good of the sport, but it's not their fault.
No.
You know, it's militant, isn't it? I mean, they have not really made many mistakes. And when they don't win a race, you know, it's like they've not won a race for 10 years. You know what I mean? It's scary when they don't win a race or they're not on the podium. But that's the way it's worked for them. And Toto, you know, as a leader, has been fantastic for that team. Well, and obviously when Nicky was there for so many years, I think that helped the drivers a lot because he understood how drivers are and how engineers are and that language, how important that language is.
So you in the motor car, I love to gas for one for ages, but what I find interesting is you like cars. You like road cars as well. You seem to have the same weaknesses that many of us do, that you can't help buying shit that ultimately is of little point.
Yeah.
So what have you got at the moment?
I've actually just sold a lot of cars.
Have you?
Yeah, just because...
P1 gone?
Because they're in America and I don't want to pay tax on them.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't want to insure them and not drive them. So, yeah, the P1's gone. I had a 675 that went. I had an F40 which went. Yeah, because I live in the States though and you can't drive them on the road. You can't go down any street.
You've still got a place over here, just bloody...
I don't.
You're
not. Nothing over here. So I sold that. I sold a Pista the other day. I had a beautiful 993 4S, 18,000 miles on the clock, silver with red interior.
We sold that.
Yeah, sold it the other day.
Can't you get our mutual friend Mazin Farwas to get you a singer?
He was actually living in his house when I sold it, and I sold it on Renlist. Look at that.
Did you?
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
I'd love to see the person collecting that one up. Oh, just get it off Jensen.
Hey, he bought it on the same day, paid me the money and picked it up within 4 hours.
Wow.
But I've got a 964 which I've played with a little bit, which is very cool. What else have I got? I've got a Singer on order. That's the only car that I have on order for the future, which is probably in 13 years time knowing Mazin Fawaz. you know what I mean?
I shouldn't.
He's like my best buddy and still I have to wait for 17 years to get a Singer car.
I've not even bothered asking. They won't even build me one.
Yeah, I mean, if you order now, it's 33 years.
Well, I might get it before I die.
Exactly. But there's loads of exciting things coming out of Singer at the moment, which you won't talk about too much, but very, very exciting. But anyway, and what else do I have?
You got the Baja truck.
I've got the Baja truck, which is sat in a garage somewhere. I got a Bronco, which is actually not mine. It's my missus's car, but I'll say it's mine. I do have a couple of lovely Jaguars.
Ah, you've got the bronze C-Type.
Yes.
The Fangio car, inverted commas, that I sat next to Chris's brother and basically sold myself around Italy in the Mille Miglia.
Yeah, I have that car and I drove it the other day. Absolutely stunning.
They are gorgeous. Has it got a naughty engine in it or has it got a normal engine in it?
No, it's normal. And it's a normal. It's the same engine as you drove it.
Is it?
Yeah.
That's quite hot for a C-Type.
Oh, yeah, totally. It shouldn't be legal. I mean, you drive it and you're driving like a bathtub.
Well, it's like a GT3 quick, isn't it, in a straight line?
It's
freaking quick.
It's the only thing I've driven and thought, all right, okay, this is really dangerous.
Yeah.
So I've got that, which is awesome. So much great history of, obviously it was Fangio's car, I was told to sell it by Ferrari, because he couldn't own a Jaguar by driving for Ferrari. It also did Mille Miglia many times. It's won Monaco with Alex at the wheel and other races. It's done Le Mans. I've also got a very special XK120.
Have you?
Which broke the 24-hour speed record. With
so is it alley-bodied and everything like that? Is it all...
With Stirling Moss at the
wheel.
Yeah, so that's pretty special. Yeah, I was pretty close with Sterling. He was always sending me emails trying to help me with my career and telling me to go to race in IndyCar and, you know, race there for a couple of years. You'll clean up. And then you can come back and race in F1 and get a proper drive. It's lovely to have that car.
We did a piece on him last night on Top Gear. So we're recording this the day after the Stirling Moss thing went out. And I have to say, I haven't been a part of a film that's been so warmly received in such a long time. You forget the national affection for the man, just what he stood for.
Such a gentleman, but such a lovely cat. I just wanted to hug him the whole time.
He was cuddly and small, wasn't he?
Yeah.
He's the only person that I actually was almost a bit shorter than me.
Yeah.
Really tiny.
And I loved his use of the word crumpet.
Sadly, there's a lot of people that don't like that now.
No.
But he was a man out of time.
Yeah.
And I love this story about him doing the Mille Miglia and finishing the Mille Miglia with Jenkinson in 722. And he dusted off over the Alps. Because he had a lunch date with a lady and he wasn't going to miss it. So he's basically nicked one of the team's cars, gone over the Alps to do whatever Sterling does after lunch.
Yeah, and yeah, amazing, amazing individual. He's racing in his 80s, around Monaco, in a classic car.
He was an absolute...
In period, yeah.
He was a legend. Oh, so you've got those two Jaguars.
I drove his Lotus as well that he won Monaco in the 1961.
Yes, that's what we had that.
Oh, the one with the open sides.
Yeah.
Because he was too hot.
Yeah.
Forget about safety, not that it did anything
anyway. No belts, nothing.
No belts, no. And I drove it around Silverstone. Where we are now. And that was a lot of fun. Again, very emotional.
So Marino Franchitti drove it last week for another. It's been doing the rounds,
obviously. Oh, it's
obviously.
Done now then.
Yeah. So basically, but Marino's saying it's jumping out of third because of me, but I reckon it might have been you because you had it first.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. I struggle to push those cars, though. I don't want to hurt them. It's like driving the old McLarens that I driven so many times, or the old Hondas at Goodwood. I'm not one to do burnouts or push them too much, because
you don't want that on your CV, do you?
No, that would hurt a lot. And I know a lot of drivers that have broken drive shaft. One being Karun Chandok, who did a burnout
drop him
start
in it,
line
Jensen.
And he broke the drive shaft. Yeah. Anyway,
Would you race at Goodwood? Would you turn up and race an old car at Goodwood?
I struggle with that, because I struggle to get in something that I know could kill me easily if I go on the grass.
Yeah.
So IndyCar is one that I've never wanted to do. I know as soon as I get in the car and put my helmet on, I'll forget about the dangers, as you do as a racing driver, and you go out and drive as hard as you can, and I always will. But when you're racing. So that's why I don't step into a car and drive around Goodwood.
Do you think your view of this has changed, particularly towards your mortality, now that you're a daddy and you've got another one on the way?
No, it's always been that way. I've always felt that way, that I'm never going to step into anything that I know that isn't right.
Hold on. I was in the same Baja race as you last year. You had to camp by your car for the night.
No,
what part of that is right?
But funnily enough, those things are 5.5 tons. 5,500 pounds.
Yeah, yeah.
No,
that's not that. So they're about 2.5 tons.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's not really... Well, it's still really heavy.
It's still five of your brawns.
Well, and you're in this roll cage, which is the truck. The truck is a roll cage. So if you hit anything, you're fine. It's what you hit isn't fine.
Yeah, but if you hit an immovable object like a tree or a boulder, it's going to hurt.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. Because it moves. They're so big and heavy. You're doing 100 miles an hour. They're probably one of the safest things I've driven. I mean, obviously, if you've got something coming through the front, it's not the same.
Well, the Bandito comes around the corner, you're camped out.
Or falling off a cliff. I mean, there's a lot of that. You're driving along the edge of cliffs, and there's no Armco barrier, is there? But no, Baja was one experience that I remember coming away from it saying, right, I'm done, never doing that again. Week later.
When are we going?
When are we going again? I'm not sure. That's the only thing my missus probably wouldn't let me do, and IndyCar. But... No, I loved that experience.
You do the smaller ones, like Mint, and that's what you do, the shorter races.
Yeah, because you're not falling, you can't fall off a cliff.
Yeah.
You can hit boulders, but you can't fall off a cliff.
Yeah.
Or there's no one coming the other way, or you can't drive through a house.
I was secretly quite glad when the thing broke. I was like, okay.
Isn't it insane? Well, you broke down at the beginning. So you were driving along on these off-road courses with massive bumps, doing 70 miles an hour. And there were trucks coming the other way.
But I realised, and the co-driver was saying it's fine. I said, it's not fine. The spectator's leaving and we're going at pace.
Yeah.
So,
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus... Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I often do things where I have to go there and I don't get much time to prepare, and I'm regretful afterwards I didn't have a proper go at it.
Yeah.
But Baja, I think I'll leave.
I was going to say, do you want to do it next year? We could do something together.
In a truck, maybe.
Yeah.
But not in that thing.
No, you got to be in a truck.
The thing, whatever it was called. That little shit.
But the problem with Baja is you pre-run. Even if you pre-run it, right? You get there to the race and it's rained like it did and it's a completely different course. Or the spectators move the course. So what they do is they'll direct you a certain way, pretending there's an incident. They'll direct you, not off a cliff, but they'll dig out a hole so that you fall down this hole, or they'll put a jump in.
Is this just for shits and giggles, or they want to rob you?
No, they won't rob you. They do it for shits and giggles. So you do the jump. Sometimes you land. If you don't land, they'll put you back on your wheels and let you carry on. So they'll help you, but they'll put you in danger's way in the process because they want to see you jump. So basically, if you see a group of people in Baja, you slow down. Seriously, that's what the co-driver said. He said, you see people, you slow down almost to a stop because they will booby-trap the course.
The pre-run, I didn't really understand. My preparation for Baja was meeting you and Maz for a game of pool the night before. That was my preparation for Baja. I may be doing about 2 kilometres. But I would like to say at this point, How many other XF1 drivers are there would do that? You, Kimi, can't think of many others from
no,
that grid.
There aren't.
I'd like to think Danny Ricciardo might get
no,
involved.
He no, wouldn't. He wouldn't either.
No?
No. He wants to drive it. We talked about driving it, him coming out to the States and having a go in it. But having a go in it is different because that's fun.
Yeah.
But driving Baja is another level. But maybe if you're around at the start of the year and we could do something together, we should try and do them in.
I'd love to. I just saw the big trucks. And I was in my little buggy and I thought, yeah, it's like being in the Iranland going, oh, I'm not properly equipped here, lads.
No, they're monsters.
So, growing up, you had no option, did you, really? It was always going to be this way. The name, what your dad did, it's always going to be this way.
It's not quite Scott Speed.
No.
But yeah, you're right. It was always going to be one way. And my dad raced in rallycross. First it was autocross,
yeah,
which is basically put some cones out and
my
drive
mother
around,
used to do
drive around cones
Western
in a field
Beach, the Buncombes, yeah, all that lot. My mother was all part of that crap,
really?
As well,
yeah. And then he did rallycross, British champs, finished second in the British champs. It's like Dan Welsh, no, was it Dan? No, Dan was the son, wasn't he?
I don't know. Was he the man to beat?
Yeah.
Oh, what was his name?
Yeah, Dan was the son. I should know this anyway. But and Skanky,
yeah.
Shanker.
Martin Shanker.
Shanker, yeah.
Have you seen that video footage of him when he kicks off in some final and he marches back on and starts lobbing stuff at the car that's still going round? He was known for having a bit of a temper.
Oh,
with
a little
Martin
bit.
Shanker. Will Gollop?
Will Gollop, yeah. But my dad raced in, he had a Beetle, which is rear-wheel drive. Loved it. 220, 240 horsepower. Loved it. Basically, it was half dirt, half tarmac, and you're racing around a track rather than a rally stage. And then he drove a Golf, VW Golf, which is front-wheel drive, which wasn't quite as much fun. He didn't like it. But still drove it really well. I was born, first boy, and I got to 7 years old, and it was the choice of racing what was the Metro? The 6R4.
Yeah.
He had a chance to race one of them or buy me a go-kart and go karting. And he chose karting, luckily. I mean, he would have had a lot of fun in a 6R4. Those things were like 600 horsepower.
Yeah.
V10, wasn't it?
Yeah. No, it was
it was a V10.
It's a V6.
No, it wasn't. It was a naturally aspirated
what,
V10.
In the 6R4?
Yeah.
Well, the homologation rally car was a V6.
Oh, no, but the rally
it?
Cross car was
they
a
V10. They had a V10?
Yeah, it was a
what
V10.
What did it sound like?
Oh, unreal. I sounded like a V10.
Wow.
Revved its nuts off and naturally aspirated, but he had the chance to drive that or get me a kart. He got me a kart, so luckily so we went karting. The first time I drove around was around a pub car park. Little did I know
where
a pub would be
near
very
Froome
important to me in my life. Where he lived by a pub, right next to a pub. He had a little one-bedroom apartment, which is off of a farm.
What a boy.
Yeah.
So he lived in a pub, yeah, he was a racing driver, and you got your son karting.
Yeah, I drove past that pub regularly when I go to Somerset. And then we took me karting, won my first race. And that was it, really. Got into karting. He didn't have the money to fund it, so we luckily got a sponsorship and a manager and what have you through karting. But, our family was big into motorsport, but... my granddad used to do autocross on my mum's side as well, which my dad never knew. But then they ended up racing together. So
I don't know. I lost my father when I was young as well. So it's difficult stuff to talk about. And if you want to stop, we stop. But I think of all the F1 drivers, it was very obvious to the viewers on television there was a special relationship between you and dad. So how does that alter your view of fatherhood? Now you're in that position, it must make you think about it quite a lot, I'd thought.
Yeah, it does. And... you know, the old boy passed away in 2014, and it was a massive shock because he was there for my whole F1 career as well. So it was a massive shock. It was unexpected, and it shouldn't have happened. He basically fell and hit his head. It changed my racing career after that.
Yeah.
Racing wasn't the same.
Was it just as not as much fun, or it didn't have the same purpose? What was it?
None of it felt the same. You know.
Did not?
Because, you know, when I came in from a good run or a bad run in testing or qualifying or the race, I'd always walk past him. And sometimes it would frustrate me because he was there, but other times it was awesome that he was there. He would never really say anything. He would just be in the background. He would never comment on, you should have done this better, or, hard luck, son.
Unconditional love and support is a weird thing.
He'd
isn't
wait
it?
For me to say something.
It's like having a dog, there. Basically.
Yeah, exactly.
That kind of knowingness.
Yeah, and you know, I'd either walk up for a hug with him or a high five, you know, and he was always there. So when that wasn't there anymore, it was weird. I was left, you know, wanting. I'd be there looking for him, and it just wasn't the same. So that really hurt, and that was part of the reason why, at the end of 2014, I was already saying I'm going to retire. My mates made me stay on, and it was probably the right thing to do.
Yeah.
Until I realised halfway through 2016 that I was done.
Yeah.
And that's when it was 100%. I was done. So yeah, now I've got a son. It's weird because every time I leave, it gets harder and harder from home. And he's at the stage where he's trying to walk and he's trying to talk. But it's awesome. You know, my missus is great. She's always sending me videos and photos, and we have FaceTime now. It makes such a difference.
Yeah, it does.
Doesn't it?
Yeah.
We need it with the amount we travel, and it's awesome. And, you know, do I want him to race? No, because it costs a lot of money. But I'm not going to stop him from racing. You know, if
well,
he
you
turns
were given
around
the chance,
me,
so yeah, does that not mean...
No, it does. If he turns around and says, Dad, I'd love to drive a go-kart, I'm going to let him drive a go-kart.
But, well, no, that's going to happen because you're always out messing around with that person we talk about on a go-kart.
I am always driving a go-kart. So, but the thing is with him, he's giant. He's a giant baby. He's almost as big as you.
Well, I'm not big.
But you're bigger than a 15-month-old.
Is he a unit?
He's really big.
Where's that come from?
My missus, her family are tall, the guys in the family. So her dad's 6'3", her brother's 6'1". But they're also big. They've got big hands, big feet. And he's got big feet and big hands.
So that might save you millions of pounds.
I mean, if we can send him the
Son.
Yeah. If we can send him the dirt oval route and the NASCAR route, I'm 100% up for that. Because it means we can go and watch him as well.
Fantastic.
I mean, NASCAR would be amazing, but yeah, single seaters aren't going to happen for him. I'm sorry to say, he's too big already. But I would love to see him in a kart. But I really struggle seeing my loved ones in karts. You know, one of my dad used to get in a kart. He was really, really bloody quick.
Yeah.
And my sister and what have you, I struggled with it because it really. I was like, oh, don't crash. I remember in 2000 when I was in F1, we went out to Norway and drove BMWs around a track in the wet. And for him, he was one of the best. You would have loved him. He was one of the best drifters.
I can imagine.
He was amazing. I was terrible. And I was a bit quicker than him. But he could drift around a corner and be pretty much as quick as me, trying to drive the car as quick as possible. I was like, I don't get this. But he was always on the lock stops. And I really did love
that. But you enjoying that more? Because, I mean, social media, you've always taken the piss out of me for being slow and sideways, which is exactly what I am. But I got a hint of the fact that in Baja, a bit of looseness, you'd suddenly quite like that.
Yeah, but when you need it, when it's necessary.
It's always necessary, Jensen.
I have to say, I've never gone sideways. I've never drifted a car. And I'm not joking you either.
I've
never understood how to drift a car because I've never tried. I mean, I've slid a car from apex to exit and what have you. But I've never gone out and understood how to drift a car from entry all the way through to exit.
Well, it wouldn't interest you and it didn't help you earn your living, did it? Why would you? Also, I think that a racing driver has been programmed from a young age. There's something in your coccyx that tells you that once you've got like a yaw sensor basically in your date that just goes and it's going sideways, straighten the fucker up, we're going too slowly.
I'm going slowly, I was never a fan of yaw. And the funny thing is there are certain things that you get yaw and I love it because it's right. You know, like the Baja truck has to be sideways at times. A rallycross car has to be sideways at times, otherwise it doesn't work. But in a single seater, no, you gotta limit that yaw.
How does the young Jensen Button deal with going from being the potential hope of motor racing to having money and fame and temptation? And everything we know that looking back could be an utter disaster for someone like yourself. How do you deal with it?
And it almost was an utter disaster. you know, I spent a fortune and I had managers that basically stole money from me. And I got to the, end of 2004 and I had nothing. And I had earned millions.
Yeah.
And I had nothing because I'd spent it on stuff. Well, my first year in the sport, I bought a boat.
Maybe you're buying a Ferrari, the press.
Yeah, I bought a Porsche. First car was a Porsche Cabriolet, which is lovely. I bought a Ferrari, which I still own.
Have you still got it?
Yeah, Mega. Still got it, which is 355, got 9,000 miles on the clock, GTS, yellow.
Good lad.
183 miles an hour I got out of that. That's what it said in the speedometer anyway. I bought, where else did I buy that yet? I bought a house, a 2.2 million pound house, yeah? A boat, which is 800 grand, and two supercars. I only earned $500,000 that year. My manager at the time was like, you'll be all right, you'll be fine. I was like, well, I believe you because you're a businessman. So that was that. And to be fair, I paid for it over the years. But then my next manager, I shouldn't have trusted, and I did, and he spent all my money on his investing in his businesses.
Yeah.
And all my money was gone. Well, it was 2004, 24, been in Formula One for 4 years. Zero.
Perception is you're sitting on millions.
Yeah, had zero in the bank. So then it had to start from there. And I did earn a lot of money in my racing career. I also spent a hell of a lot of money in my racing career. I bought another boat.
But what's the point? You've got to spend some of it, haven't you?
No, exactly. And I didn't get to the end of my career and have... see in the morning. And I didn't have... Sorry, that's just the boss leaving. Bob Neville. He's the RJN of Jensen Team Rocket. So much history. Raced Dakar. Won Dakar in his class. Won multiple GT championships. Anyway.
And was talking about being overtaken by Ronnie Peterson in a CSL earlier.
Sideways.
Wearing a flat cap, which I quite like.
Yeah, I love his flat cap. But I've gone off track a little bit. Oh, yeah.
I don't want to hear a story about Jensen Button squirreling it away, going to the accountant, investing sensibly. I want to know it was a nonsense.
I've only just started investing. Yeah. but I definitely spent more than you could say I should have. I wish I had. No, I don't wish I had more because I loved it. I had such a good time. I loved the stupid trips to flying from a race to Saint-Tropez, spending a night. Absolutely getting hammered for two nights and finishing up Tuesday morning. I mean, the most hungry I've ever been, flying to the next race and racing and winning.
Yes.
And winning the next race. And, you know.
But that's what it should be like.
Yeah, I mean, at the time, you probably should be a little bit more professional. But when you look back, it's great having the stories, you know what I mean?
But do you remember thinking, I want to be James Hunt, I don't want to be Niki Lauda?
I didn't want to be as much James Hunt as James Hunt was.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I want to be in the middle a bit balanced. But, you know, when it came to racing, I was very serious. And I had to be to get the best out of myself. But, yeah, I did have a lot of fun. And I did rent a jet now and again when I needed to get to a party.
Did you ever buy a jet?
I did own a jet, actually, and a helicopter. and I lost money on everything, and I didn't make money on much.
But do you think, having not come from vast wealth, it makes you feel less worried about potentially going back there? Because you knew you survived.
No, I totally worried about it as well.
Did you?
So I did spend money, but I also worried about spending money. So there was a kind of a balance. And I came out at the end of my racing career and, did very well for myself. So I'm very comfortable. I'm very happy, and I also know that I enjoyed myself a lot.
You don't seem damaged by it. Some people are very defensive if they've been through the process you've been through. They're not generous anymore. They're guarded. They assume everyone out there wants a free lunch. You're not like that. Whenever I've seen you, you've always gone, do you want a beer?
Yeah, I didn't trust a lot of people, especially after my second manager in F1. First manager was Dave Robertson and Howard Heusman, who Dave Robertson was fantastic, and his son and Dave ended up managing Kimi.
Ah.
I think Steve Robertson still manages Kimi.
That during certain parts of Kimi's career was quite a job, quite a task.
Yeah, well, funnily enough, when they managed me first, or Dave Robertson, who sadly passed away, he managed me, and that was the big thing. It was like, we're not going to manage any of the drivers. And I was like, okay, cool. I'm happy with that. And I need that, really. I need just you to be looking after me. And then the next year, they started managing Kimi. And I was like, oh, that's what hurt our relationship a little bit. Anyway, the second manager, that hurt a lot. That hurt me a lot. You know, I didn't trust anyone.
Yeah.
Really struggled to make new friends because I didn't trust anyone.
Yeah.
My closest friends, like Chrissy, you know, he knew what I was like in terms of meeting new people. I was terrible. Really was bad because I didn't trust anyone. So that was tough. So it took me a lot of years to get over that. You know, the great thing is now living in LA, I am making new friends, but I'm still very picky with who I want as a friend.
No, I don't trust people. No, you're not. The barriers of entry are low. Amazing for a while. So, I mean, dearie me.
But also, you probably think we're friends, but we're not. That's the thing.
Think we're friends.
Yeah.
No.
Good.
No,
I'm good. You don't want to be my friend.
I'm even more antisocial than you, I can assure you. There are three people I talk to in Bristol.
You're socially uncomfortable, aren't you?
Yeah, I don't like it. And also, so a Maz, like, I would consider Maz to be a good old friend, and I will not talk to him for 3 or 4 months at a time.
No.
And I will get a message that just says, "Hey, dude, how are you?" And I'm alive. The whole point of a great friendship for me is that it doesn't require any maintenance, and it picks up.
And you pick up from...
pick up. You've not seen each other for ages.
Exactly.
And that's the measure of a friendship.
Yeah.
But then I'm a damaged boarding school
child. We live in the completely different worlds. He's living in the UK and I'm living in Australia, I was going to say.
Yeah.
In LA. So it's we're 11 hours from each other, but we still spend a lot of time on the phone and we work together. So yeah, we're on the phone every day, actually. We speak every day.
The LA move has worked.
Yeah,
you
love
like it.
It
there?
I really, really like it.
What's the best thing? The space, the climate, what is it?
It's 28 degrees every day. it really is. I mean...
Not Somerset, which is one of the rainiest parts in the world.
It is. I mean, when you come back, it is beautiful. I love the UK. It's so green.
He's being manhandled by Chris Bunker.
You need to undo my flies if you want to get to that, buddy.
What's the keys? Is that your Defender, that three-door Defender? You blagged it.
Really good.
It looks lovely. It looks so much better than the five door.
I like the five door as well, but X.
That's nice.
It's the X.
Are you tempted to make an order?
I got it, and they asked me what I wanted to borrow, really, for a few days. And it was either that or the big one, or the HSC Range Rover. And I've had them, and I love them. But I was like, I've got to try this out. So I did. And I bloody love it. Every time I drive a car... Because I'm lucky enough that I have driven a few different cars, but every time I drive a car, there's always something I'm like, disappointed with that. Not disappointed in anything with this. I guess maybe you don't expect too much because it's a Defender.
Yeah.
But there's nothing Defender about it.
Look at those rear lights. How cool. That looks like Star Wars.
No. But there's nothing Defender about it.
No.
It drives really well. It's really fast. It stops. I've never driven a Defender that does any of that.
Yeah. Well, I don't get the Defender thing. I'm sorry.
I love the look of a Defender, but you get in it, and most of the time, it's bloody awful.
I bought a brand new one in 2008, because I had this romanticised idea that all my children would drive it as their first car, we'd keep it as a family and all this other stuff, and it was shite. And after 3 months, I just said, throw it in the bin, it's terrible.
Well, that's why a Singer works, because every time you get in an old car, even when I get in a 1990s, the 993 Porsche, I look at it and I think, this is going to be stunning. You get in it, and it never feels like you think it's going to feel. It's rubbish. But with the Singer... You get in it and it feels like you want it to feel. And that's why it's $650,000.
No, well, I thought that might be yours. That's really, really good looking.
No, it's awesome. And it corners well. It's got the big motor in it as well.
So what's it, a supercharged V8 or what's it got in it?
No, it's V6.
Is
turbo,
it?
V6. But it's got hybrid, so it fills in the gaps.
Ah.
So it accelerates really well. It's still got the Range Rover brakes, though, which brake really hard. You touch the brake and you're through the windscreen.
Yeah, and then that thing happens.
Yeah.
The seatbelt tries to garrote you and you're like... Oh.
But I mean, the brakes are amazing, but it just takes a little time to get used to when you haven't been driving a Range Rover for a long time. But they should be really proud of that. That's the best Range Rover I've driven for a long time.
Did you enjoy Le Mans?
I loved Le Mans.
Because it feels to me like you didn't quite... that there's unfinished business there.
I didn't like being there for a week.
Yeah.
I mean, going there for the photo in the town centre on the Sunday the week before, I didn't like... I mean, and then you're hanging around for 3 days. It's too long.
Yeah.
This year would have been amazing, so it was a four-day weekend.
Yeah.
Five-day weekend. But absolutely love the atmosphere. I'm such... For me, being part of a team is really key. Working with drivers, working with a team to build a team and to work on strategy and set up. And I love all that. And that's why it was great having a team here, you know. I want to go back. The aim is to go back there as soon as possible. But the
if
real
they open it up to these GT3 things, how good would that
be? Well, the dream would be to have a team there and race for that team. That would be the aim.
Yeah.
But I would love to do it with a prototype.
Ah.
Yeah, I'd love to do a prototype. Have you seen the regs for next year?
No.
The regs for next year, you have to have an AM. In LMP2. I know.
That's quite handy, isn't it, Mr. Buncombe?
Yeah. We twisted their arm, and Chrissy will be a reasonably quick AM, I think.
Yeah.
As he's won Le Mans. As a pro.
The FIA driver rankings working well as you.
Yeah, it is for us.
Is there anything else you want to do? Are there any boxes that remain unticked in the driving world?
Le Mans is definitely one of them. I had a real itch to do IndyCar, but not the ovals, do the street circuits. And I had two tests set up with McLaren to do the test. First one, COVID struck. Second one, I was mid... it was in between the two Austrian Grand Prix, F1 races.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I could have flown back. It was fine. But Indy said they wouldn't let me in because I'd been in Europe. So I couldn't do the test. So basically, the idea was to race next year.
Yeah. The media thing is going irritatingly well, obviously. But people like me that try to struggle along in a career in media and you just saunter in, having been a racing driver, and you tend to be rather good at it. Do you enjoy it?
I do.
You are a flipping good pundit, and I'll remove my nose from your backside, but you're great.
I'm enjoying it, and I enjoy working with the people I'm working with. That's the thing. If I wasn't working with people I didn't like, I wouldn't do it. No interest whatsoever. I mean, it is like a school playground.
I can imagine.
It is like a school playground with everyone. There's so many people that are working for Sky Sports F1. It's hilarious, mate. You just sit there and listen. It's awesome. There's so much gossip.
like being part of a race team, isn't it basically?
Is. But for me, I work with Lazenby a lot, and I just couldn't do his job. I don't get it.
He is so good at that job. He's the best at his job.
Yeah, but I don't get it. I mean, I don't get how he does it. He just suddenly switches it on. And there's so much going on in his ears. And I couldn't do it. The countdown, the count up, whatever is going on in his ears, he just deals with it. And he's not the most organized person. I don't know if you know him.
No, I don't.
But he's just awesome. He's a legend, mate. He really is. I've never known anyone to do his job like he does it. And I think he's going to have a job for life. I really do.
Yeah, he's spectacular at it. So... And we've got to round this up now because they've got to shut the garages down because the light's fading outside. I'm going to paint a picture for you like a cricket commentator. The light is fading. The gloaming is now set in. There's a silhouette of a new defender there, but there's the bright lights of an empty pit garage at Silverstone, which is actually quite an amazing looking thing. It's like the end of Layer Cake when Michael Gambon's going, well, that's the Layer Cake, son. It feels like you're about to deliver.
What cast that was. There's also, I can't believe someone's bought a GT3 Touring in yellow.
Was anyone else offered? I wrote the other one.
Oh,
I like
yours.
Yeah, that's mine.
Oh,
my black one got written off.
No, so I had to get yellow one. I do like yellow.
Why don't you come eat my dog after?
We're talking about cars.
Yeah.
You've left your dog in the car. Oh, it's cold. It's all right.
Yeah, it's fine. It's fine.
You're talking about cars that I own. I do actually have my dad's 57 Corvette.
Do you?
Still, I bought it for him for his 60th. 57, so it's single front headlight, 3-speed, black with the silver sides, red interior.
Would you allow yourself to wear a pink shirt whilst driving it?
Oh, would I allow? I would only allow myself to wear a pink shirt while driving. I've also got, he had a 550, which was basically, he used to call his girlfriend, Burgundy 550.
Regularly seen on the French Riviera, I gather.
Yeah, exactly. And he put sports exhausts on it now. So he was older when he bought it, so he was quite deaf already. I drive it and I'm deaf after 30 seconds. It's so, so loud.
You still got it?
Yeah.
You could never sell that, could
no,
you?
No, it is stunning, that car. It's a lovely car. So, yeah.
So how did you, and this is the last question, you appear to be glass half full to me. There is this sort of affability to you, you're smiley. There were times in the paddock when we'd watch you after a bad race being interviewed, and you seem to be, of the last 20 years, the driver that somehow could put the bravest face on quite ropey situations. How on earth did you do that? Because the number of times you must have wanted to go, oh, just fuck off and leave me alone, and you never did.
There was one time where I got told off.
Was there? Just once?
Once. It was 2005. I remember, it was Malaysia. Sepang qualified really well, quick. It's actually the race that I raced with another British driver. It was Anthony Davidson. He jumped in for Takuma, who was ill.
Yeah.
Jumped in the car. And both went out. After half a lap, I think it was, my engine blew up. And as I got taken back to the pits, I saw Anthony had blown up as well. Same lap. And I came back in and did the post-race interviews, and I said, they said, oh, that's disappointing. I said, yeah, it's not hard to make an engine last for half a lap, is it? Or something like that. And and they went off the charts. Yeah, Honda did, which is understandable. But I was so angry because it was something so simple that broke both engines. And that was the only time I got told off for saying something.
But it was amazing. And I think, I mean, it can be viewed as a lack of personality always being good. But I think if you're a young person watching the sport, you don't want to see people totally lose their shit, do you?
It's funny because we love reality TV, don't we,
at
the moment. But no, I mean, you've got to be controlled. You're also doing the best job in the world.
Yeah.
And you're not just the face for yourself. You are the face for an organization, a manufacturer, sponsors. And you want to be someone that kids look up to. And if you're a spoiled brat, what are we going to end up with in Formula One?
Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. It's been fantastic. So, from collecting cars to Jenson Button, a big thank you. Best of luck this weekend. Don't worry about the balance performance. You'll nail them all. But they get given a massive advantage. As an Am who's raced in that category, It's great to have the chance to race against you. And any one of those British GT drivers that's whinging about you being on the grid should remember there's no other sport in the world where, as an AM, you get to race against the world champion. Is there? Maybe darts or golf.
Triathlons.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. Yeah, so, no, I'm excited. It's just awesome to get back to the UK, mate, and race on a circuit I love. I've never got a podium here in an F1 car.
Have you not?
It's one of the only circuits I never got on the podium.
Oh, okay then. Bonne chance, as they say, in wherever.
Merci.
Cheers, boss. Thank you. Collecting Cars, the safe, smart and simple way to buy and sell collectible cars. An online auction platform for the UK and Europe. Follow us on Instagram at Collecting Cars and also collectingcars.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.